Hi everyone, thank you so much for being the loyal listeners of this podcast. My name is Thomas Noto Suoneto, the founder and host of this podcast. For you, the new listeners, this podcast is designed to bring to you candid and constructive discussion on many important international issues, from politics, economy, law, security, feminism, and others. And usually, it's conducted through interviews with so many important and outstanding foreign policy stakeholders, from academicians, researchers, ambassadors, diplomats, and even young foreign policy analysts or enthusiasts. Drop me a chat on my LinkedIn and be connected at Thomas Noto Suoneto, and also drop us a message if you have any ideas for the further episodes at Foreign Policy Talks Podcast on Instagram. So enjoy the conversation. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, the listeners of Foreign Policy Talks Podcast. Thank you so much for being the loyal listeners of this podcast, and I'm happy that you're still with us. Today, I want to talk about a very interesting topic, a topic that I've been following since 2018, when I was visited North Korea at that time. And, you know, it's very interesting to follow South Korean politics. And as you know, that we've just hit the news that South Korea is having a new president, the conservative Yoon Suk-yeol, elected as the South Korea's next president after Lee Jae-myung from the ruling Democratic Party is loose with a very tight difference of voting results. Right, and in a nail-biting vote, the opposition leader won 48.56% of the ballot share ahead of Lee's, which is at 47.83%, with 99.99% of the total votes have counted by the South Korean National Election Commission. So, you know, we're going to talk deeply on this, mainly on the elected president Yoon's foreign policy, right? What will he bring to South Korean foreign policy in the next few years? I'm not alone. I'm going to discuss this topic with Sung Kim, the director of public affairs at Korea Economic Institute of America, very experienced in Korean affairs, Korean domestic politics, and Korea-US engagement. Let me greet her. How are you, Sung Kim?
I'm great. I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
Right. So, are you excited to talk about this?
Yeah, I mean, this is something that me and my colleagues have been following for a really long time. And then, as you saw as from the election result, it was a very, very close tie. So, I think everyone who was watching the election was, you know, whether they're in South Korea staying up all night or in the US, you know, watching throughout the day, it was really keeping us on the edge of our seat to trying to figure out who's actually going to win this race.
Oh, right. Right. Sung Kim, would you mind to share to my listeners about any surprising facts that you've found from the election results, right? I know that we have a very narrow gap, right, at the voting results from two candidates. But can we identify any, I don't know, major difference in terms of the voters for these two candidates? And what's basically the difference of these two candidates, if you can a little bit explain to our listeners?
Sure. So I would say the biggest, you know, surprising fact was the actual result, right? As we talked about earlier, how close this was. I mean, there was a less than 1% difference, which is the closest margin in South Korea's presidential election history since it started a democratic process in 87. So I think it was surprising to both parties, actually, because the People Power Party, where Yoon Suk-yeol is from, they actually thought they would win by a larger point. So the chairman, Lee Jun-suk, at a point, even said, you know, they might win by 10% difference. But unfortunately, that wasn't the case. And the Democratic Party, on the other hand, obviously, they were hoping to win, but they thought they were going to win by a small margin, but they lost by a very small margin. So when the exit polls came out, which was very close to the actual result, both sides were very surprised at the number that they found out. And also, historically, South Korean presidents usually, they're limited to a one term, but each party had served under two presidents. So for example, conservatives always had two consecutive president, and for progressive side, they had President Kim Dae-jung and also Noh Moo-yeon consecutively. So this was the first time that the progressive party only got to serve one president. So that was also a surprise to the Democratic Party, but also, you know, signified that people wanted a government change this time. And a little bit on the younger voters, and yes, you're right, there was a gender divide between young voters and also the gender difference as well. So especially those voters in 20s was the biggest voting bloc, and also there's a lot of tension of who they would vote for. And we have to wait for the actual data, but according to the exit polls, 58% of the males in 20s voted for Yoon Suk-yeol, and 57% of the females in their 20s voted for Lee. And we'll get into it a little later, but so there was a lot of gender-related issues for this election, and Yoon has strongly appealed to the South Korean males in their 20s. He had put out very gender bias, you know, platforms like abolishing Ministry of Gender Equality that many young males supported. But towards the end of closer to the polling date, we do see a lot of female voters coming out and voting against that. So that's where we see the gender difference.
Wow, that's very interesting, Sung Kim. I'm curious to know deeply on South Koreans' voting preference, Sung Kim. So when they choose Yoon, basically they like the party, or they like the individual person of Yoon himself. Yeah.
So in terms of voter behavior, it's also good to talk about the age in general. So I'll start with that, and then talk a little bit more about your question, or whether it was more the party that they wanted, or him as a president. So traditionally, if you look at from the oldest to the youngest, people over 60s have always voted for a conservative candidate. And 50s, people in their 50s, they were divided, but kind of lean more towards conservatives. And people in their 40s, mostly Democratic candidate. 30s and 20s, they used to be a big supporter for our President Moon in 2017, but this election we saw that for multiple different reasons they were divided, and they were also leaning towards the more conservative candidate this time around. So that begs the question, you know, are they actually turning conservative, and are they voting? Did they vote for Yoon because they like the People Power Party, or was it just more of a protest vote to show that they were not happy with Moon's presidency in the past 5 years? And there was an interesting exit poll interview done by the Gallup Korea that talked about how about 40 something percent of people who voted for Yoon voted because they didn't want the other candidate to win. So I think there's a lot of studies that needs to be looked at and the analyzing on why they actually voted for Yoon. Because you might have heard this election, both of the leading candidates were not very favorable to their voters, and they kind of voted in order to prevent the other candidates from winning. So I think there's a lot of that. Versus like if they're actually believing in the People Power Party.
Wow, very interesting. But Sung Kim, I'm sure that you know, Yoon can win because of the big promises that he offered during the election campaign. What's your outlook on changes that he will bring for his first year of his presidency or his leadership? You can talk about domestic economic, social issues if you want.
Mm-hmm. Right. So he will take the office, you know, May 10th, and then from now until then, he would, you know, put together his transitional team and start recruiting advisors for different issues, right? It's not clear what he would focus on as a very first item, but there are lists of things that he has promised during the campaign trail, and also the major issues that South Korea is facing. So obviously one of those will be the handling of COVID situation. And we know South Korean government handled COVID very well in the past 2 years. We're also seeing the numbers, cases still remain very high, and the small business owners are really struggling in terms of their business. So he had promised that he would lessen restrictions around social distancing and business hours. So most likely we will see that when he becomes the president, and also maybe more support for the small business owners. And housing was one of the biggest concerns for South Koreans going to the polls this year. So he also has promised to ease the housing restriction, whether that's, you know, getting loans easier for people who are looking to get loans for housing, or easing restrictions on reconstruction, remodeling. And he also promised to provide more, just in terms of like supply of more housing throughout the country in his 5-year term. So that may be also be something he's probably looking to do early on, because I'm sure the housing adjustment prices, it would take time to really show. So those are some of the major domestic issues. One last thing, he did talk about abolishing the Ministry of Gender Equality, and that was one of the biggest controversial promises that he had made. Realistically speaking, that would also mean that he would have to change the South Korean law. That means he has to go through the National Assembly, which is currently controlled by the Democratic Party at the time. So even if he wants to keep the promise of abolishing the Ministry of Gender Equality, it will be very, very tough for him to make that happen. So overall, he faces a lot of challenges. Not only the country is very divided on the political issues, you know, gender issues, and just very divided, to say the least. And also, he has still the Democratic Party controlled National Assembly until 2024. So a lot of challenges, a lot of difficult issues for him to, you know, work on when he becomes the president.
Right. I like your point when you said that he will feel he will have difficulties, right, and delivering his promises because of the majority of his opponent is now in the assembly. Right. I think that's something that the listeners needs to know. But Sung Kim, I would like to talk about foreign policy, right? Because this is a foreign policy talks podcast. But so Yoon has a different approach on North Korea if we compare to previous president, or now still your president, President Moon. He once said that he will no longer tolerate North Korean provocation and promising to fix Pyongyang's bad habits, right? So what will we see from his policy on North Korea, Sung Kim?
Sure, yes. So Yoon, as we know, doesn't have any foreign policy experience. So he will be relying heavily on his advisors who have, you know, worked on these issues for a really long time. And during his campaign trail, the advisors that he had recruited were very experienced and seasoned career diplomats from Lee Myung-bak administration and the other previous conservative government. So, and he is most likely to kind of go down the path of what the previous conservative South Korean president has pursued. So obviously, you know, very tough stance on North Korea and very pushing for denuclearization before engaging with North Korea. closer ties to the U.S.-Korea relations. I mean, just to be fair, U.S.-Korea relations has been very close, but he has promised to, you know, make that alliance even closer, working together on various different issues. Some people also predict that he will resume military exercises that we have put on hold for a little bit, whether that's for a COVID reason or for other reasons, and just really aligning more with the United States on either North Korea or on China issues.
Wow, it's a big change that we will see, right? And again, I think for my friends and colleagues who have been advocating for peace on the Korean Peninsula, will be having some troubles, right, under Yoon's presidency, do you think? Right.
I mean, so while, you know, the election was going on, North Korea was also continues to test their missiles and continue their provocations. So it would be interesting to see where Yoon takes the South Korea's North Korea policy and how things develop from there.
Right. How about China, Sung Kim, right? He mentioned a few times that China, of course, is an important partner of South Korea, but he's not very comfortable with all of the tensions that China might, have in the region, in East Asia or even in Southeast Asia and so on and so forth. What do you think about the future of South Korea-China relationships?
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that is the big important topic at the moment. And we've heard Yoon say that he criticized President Moon Jae-in for not taking sides between the US and China, right? So he talks about how South Korea should take more stance on where South Korea stands, which he means by, you know, closer to the United States than China. And he has pledged to take tougher stance on China as well. And that is kind of reflecting the current public opinion, public sentiment in South Korea at the moment. You've probably seen a poll where South Koreans recently feel like they, in terms of the favorite likability, they put North Korea and Japan ahead of China. So that's how bad the South Korean feel about China at the moment, whether that's on like a cultural discussion online to Olympics, especially that we saw a lot of like anti-China sentiment. So that's what also Yoon promised as well. But it will be also interesting to see what his actual policy would be when he becomes the president, because I'm sure, you know, many listeners know that South Korea and China has a very close economic ties. That's one of the reasons why South Korean presidents in the past have been very cautious about picking either China or the United States, just keeping that economic relationship in mind. So it will be interesting to see whether Yoon will be able to really push forward with, you know, taking harder stance on China and leaning more towards the United States, or would he have to kind of make a compromise in between because of the economic ties that South Korea has with China?
So you mentioned that Yoon will pretty much change the strategic ambiguity that South Korea is currently playing.
Yes, that's what he has promised during the campaign trail. And we'll see if that will be the South Korea's policies.
Right. Do you have any names on his upcoming foreign minister, Sung Kim?
Not at the moment. It's still very early stage, right? So I think maybe in coming weeks or months, we'll see what his advisors would look like, but I think they're still working on recruiting the right person for different foreign policy positions.
Right. In terms of the experience or understanding on foreign policy, which one is better? Is it Yoon or the Lee? Yoon or Lee, in terms of foreign policy knowledge, Sung Kim?
Well, to be fair, Lee Jae-myung also did not have foreign policy experience, and neither of them had National Assembly experience as well. So Lee Jae-myung, just to remind you, he was the mayor of a city in Gyeonggi province, and he was a governor of Gyeonggi province. So he had a local government experience, and I'm sure there was international, you know, affairs within that, you know, the province that he led. I'm sure there was an interaction and trade related things as well. But in terms, you know, of like the country's foreign policy, neither of them have experience, direct experience. So they would be relying heavily on their advisors, their, you know, foreign policy experts. So that, yeah, so that would be, they're kind of the same in terms of that level.
Right. Sankip, a lot of my listeners want me to ask you about this because most of them are coming from Southeast Asia, also the member of our Foreign Policy Talks Discussion Club. And they want to know about the continuity of New Southern policy, for instance, right? Or to make it very general, the future of South Korea-Southeast Asia relationships. Have we ever mentioned about, you know, the potential of engaging Southeast Asia for South Korea?
Yeah, that's also, I mean, New Southern policy was one of President Moon's signature foreign policy, right? And he really tried to strengthen the diplomatic and economic ties in the region. And this is like going along with the diversifying their, you know, strategic focus and just reaching out to broader partners in the area. And just to kind of recap what President Moon did, he did expand into more non-traditional initiatives, such as, you know, climate change, you know, digital innovation and global health. And I believe he was the first one to visit all the the ASEAN countries as a South Korean president. And he really did put, you know, Southeast Asia on top of his, you know, foreign policy list, right? Yes. So you're asking a very valid question, whether this will continue. So it's still hard to predict because it's still very early, but based on some of the comments that, you know, Yoon Suk-yeol made, he is interested in, you know, continuing some of the economic relationship in the Southeast Asia region. There is KEI's contributing author named Sarah Kim, who wrote a piece on this on KEI's blog. So I highly recommend that piece. But just to, you know, refer to some of the points that she did make, she said that Yoon has stated that he's looking to consider formally applying for the quadrilateral security dialogue. And he wants to, you know, not only create more distinguished strategy or engaging with Southeast Asia and India, but also demonstrate more open-mindedness in addressing security concerns. So it sounds like he would most likely continue engage with the region, but I also want to say maybe he will change the name because the New Southern Policy was such a Moon's like signature policy. And as you may, you know, notice with the presidents, they also like to have their own initiative. So maybe he will take some of the initiatives from the New Southern Policy, but, you know, brand it as, I don't know what the new name will be, but something that, you know, people can associate Yoon with.
Right.
That would be my prediction.
You know, Sun Kim, I'm planning to write something about the South Korean Southeast Asia relationship, but it's pretty much difficult because he rarely mentioned about Southeast Asia, right? And
right.
I think I agree with you that it's a bit too early to know what he's going to do with Southeast Asia. Maybe I would like to turn it into just some expectation from you. But anyway, there are a lot of questions as well, Sun Kim, about this. So many people don't know that actually your president is just ruling for one term, only 5 years, right? There's no second term for anybody who's ruling in your country. So talking about this, do you have any you know, comments on whether it's going to become a trouble for your policy sustainability, right? Either it's a domestic policy or foreign policy, or do you think it's still a good system that South Korea needs to keep applying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I would like to start by, you know, talking about why South Korea only has one term limit for president. So South Korea has fought really hard for their democratic process, right? So you know, under the dictatorship under Park Chung-hee, he actually was in control for a really long time, and there are a lot of he had too much power on his hand to carry out all this, some might say, good economic policy, but also there were also brutal humanitarian issues that he also pushed through. So in order to prevent another dictator from taking power and really taking too much of a control, the South Korean constitution limits to 1 year, one term for 5 years. And some people, you know, obviously would say that it's not enough time for any president to really roll out a consistent, good economic policy that you would get to see. Because obviously any policies will take a couple of years to see the effects. Yep. And there has been debates for about how South Korea should change its presidential system similar to the United States, where they can be elected for 4 years and limit to two terms, like 8 years total. But unfortunately, that debate, it continues for years on, but has not passed the National Assembly. So that debate is still going on. There's still people that say, you know, the president should be, president's term should be limited to just 1 5-year. Some other people say, let's make that 4 years for two terms, but nothing has been decided. So here we are, 5 year, one term.
Right. So thank you so much, Sung Kim, for sharing your thoughts about the questions I give it to you. I know some of them are very tough, right? Considering that it's still too early because he just won the election. But I'm sure you, similar to me, right, and people here in the region are very excited on what Yoon is going to bring, right, in terms of his foreign policy. But happy to talk to you today, and then wish we can talk again after he is inaugurated as your president. Thank you so much, Sung Kim.
All right, thank you so much. And then if I could just, you know, do the little shameless plug here for listeners, anyone interested in staying contact with the Korea related news, I recommend KEI. You know, our website is keia.org for any latest US Korea relations, you know, South Korean domestic politics or anything related to Korea. But thank you so much for the opportunity to interview on this podcast.
Right, and Sung Kim, please feel free to share your work, right, your publication, either it's an external publication or anything that you have on your Korea Economic Institute of America. Thank you so much, Sung Kim.
Great, thank you.